right. Hey, guys, welcome back to the podcast. This week, I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down and talking with Lori Ferguson, who in my family is simply known as Fergie. And you will, you'll get to, I think, catch a glimpse of the Fergie experience here in this week's conversation. It was not at all what I had expected. And I think as you spend some time listening to our conversation, you will come to truly appreciate what it means to practice perseverance through heartbreak as the means to loving well. So without further ado, my conversation with Fergie. Lori Ferguson, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this is good. It's been entirely too long since we've
absolutely
sat around and just chatted.
Absolutely, it's been a long time. And how well, Ethan is how old now?
Ethan will turn 20 this summer in a couple of weeks.
We've known each other 8 years.
About that. Yep. Yep, I will never forget the first time we met.
Oh, he was doing push-ups.
He was doing push-ups. He never forgot his backpack again.
Nope.
You thought I was nuts, which was...
Yeah, I'm like, pretty sure I had a couple people do push-ups.
Yep.
In my day. I gave him the choice.
It was great. It was great. Yep, we met. So, for those that haven't heard this story, Ethan, you know, had left his backpack at home. And so he calls home, can I lift my backpack? So I come into the office and they're like, he's actually in Miss Ferguson's classroom, which is right there. So you can go give it to him. I was like, all right. Knocked on your door and I said, make him earn it. And you were like, what? I said, make him do some push-ups or something to get
yep.
it.
Yep.
And he did, right
yep.
there.
It was
great.
With a grin.
Yep.
That's one thing I love about Ethan, is that no matter what's going on, he always has a big, dumb grin on his face.
Big, like, dumb grin. Yep. Yep. He is a moron. A lovable moron.
A lovable moron. A smart moron.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Wicked smart, but man, is he goofy.
He is goofy.
He just makes my heart happy.
Yep. Yep. He's never known a day to not have fun. That's for sure.
Well, that's why he's one of my favorite
yep.
people. So
yep.
that's okay.
All right. So for folks who don't know the great Fergie, give us a little background, what you do in the Lincoln community, kind of where you're.
So I graduated from Eastern. I'm originally from the Grand Blanc area by Flint. And then I went to teach in Virginia for 4 years.
Oh,
and,
I didn't know that.
It was back when, like, getting a job in southeastern Michigan as a teacher was just, it just wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So, my cousin is in the Navy, or retired from the Navy now, and he lived out, he was an officer in the Navy, and he said, come live with me. And I said, sign me up. So I went and lived in Virginia Beach, and it was lovely. It was fabulous.
Yeah.
And then my father had a health scare. And I am a daddy's girl. So I said, all right, that's it. Packed up my stuff and drove home. And I started working at Lincoln in summer school. I taught summer school kindergarten.
Okay.
I do not belong in kindergarten, for everyone who's listening. And
I'm trying to imagine you. I can't picture you with kindergarten.
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it was not my cup of tea. Yeah. And then that first year at Lincoln in 2002, I was a building sub.
Okay.
And I made myself, what's the word I'm looking for? They couldn't function without me.
Yep.
Invaluable.
You became a linchpin.
I did. And they hired me in the fall of 2003 was my first contracted year.
Okay.
And then I just started, when I was driving out, when I was teaching summer school, I was driving out in the cornfields on my way to work. And I was like, you know what? I belong here. This is my place. And then I got hired, and then I've been there ever since. I taught 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade. And then an opportunity arose for me to move into the front office as Dean of Students. And I did that. I loved it because I love kids.
Yeah.
They just really make my heart happy. And I always knew that I wanted to work with kids.
Yeah.
Like from 2nd grade on, I just, when anybody ever asked me, there was that brief time when I wanted to be a fighter pilot around when Top Gun came out. But
fair enough.
Who didn't want to?
Well, who still doesn't kind of want to?
Right.
Especially when the new Top Gun comes out.
I'm so excited. that was something I always wanted to do because kids, you know, quote our good friend Whitney, I believe their children are our future.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just something that I wanted. And kids, you know, they screw up and they need people to guide them to make sure that they're making the good choice that they need to be successful adults. And then an opportunity arose to become assistant principal, and I took that on. And then just something that my kids are always near and dear to my heart. There was a thing on Facebook I saw the other day that said, "I'll always call you my kid because once you've spent a year with me, you're mine no matter what."
Yeah.
So, you know, I get invited to weddings and baby showers and things like that, and it really makes me so proud to see the kind of people that our students at Lincoln really grow up into, because
yeah,
there are some phenomenal, phenomenal people, phenomenal kids.
Yep.
And good families. So
yeah,
that's who I am. I am.
So, all right. So not only are you, you know, you love kids, you did the teacher thing. You've done the Dean of Students thing, you're doing the assistant principal thing, but it's not just any kids. You have subjected yourself to middle school kids.
Middle school kids.
Which, you know, yes, is the worst 3 years in the life.
Seventh grade is the black hole. Seventh grade, everybody, I don't care if you're a straight A student, I don't care if you're like from the best family on the planet and have all kinds of support, but seventh grade, those hormones hit your bloodstream.
Yep.
And they lose their ever-loving mind.
Yeah.
And it's, I did my student teaching in 5th grade.
Okay.
And my cooperating teacher told me, her and I were not simpatico. she's like, "You don't belong here. You don't belong in elementary." And I was like, "Well, what?" Like, I had never considered not being an elementary teacher.
Right.
She's like, "No." And I did 5th grade. And she's like, "You need to be with the older kids."
Mm.
And I just, and then after that, my first teaching job was in middle school. And middle school kids are hilarious because you have, like, you know, one girl who's still plays with Barbies in 6th grade, and then you have another kid that has older siblings and is wearing, you know, all sorts of adult things and lipstick,
right,
and makeup and whatever, and then they change so much from when I saw them in 6th grade or even up to 8th grade, and then when they become adults, like, I have students that walk up to me in the grocery store and say, "Don't you remember me?" No. Like, if you tell me your name,
right?
Like, I can, you know, but I, like, Ethan,
yeah,
like, he's changed so much from being a 6th grader, and even Libby.
Yep.
You know, like, you've changed so much that, and I just think it's really cool that I get to see them, because usually by 8th grade, they've started to get their, like, real facial features,
right,
and
right,
whatever,
right,
and it's just really cool to see that transition. And they're just a mess.
Yeah.
Just a dirty, sloppy mess in middle school. And so, I belong there because I, too, am a dirty, sloppy mess sometimes.
Yeah. So, I just think about, you know, middle school is just, yeah, it is. It's kind of that black hole. And it's that season of life that I don't know anybody that's like, "I can't wait to go back to middle school."
No.
Everyone's like, most of us, I think, have repressed most of that season of our life, and yet you have said, "Yeah, I want in. I want to do middle school every day for the rest of my life."
Yep. Yep. 25 years.
Yes.
Year?
So
in middle school.
So I mean, okay. So you get to see them go, like, you get to see them transform and change and all that. But why? I mean, what? What is it about these middle schoolers that just grabs your heart? Because as the assistant principal, you also get the joy, I'm assuming, of spending the vast majority of your time with disciplinary cases. So not only are you working with middle school kids, you're working with the middle school kids that are, you know, the ones that people are like, "Dear Lord, I want to drop kick this one through the goalposts of life." Yes. So
yes, there's a few faces that are flashing in front of my head, in front of my face. Yeah. Middle school, they're just, it's so cool to see like who they, because you can see it, right? Like you can see like underlying, not to say that their lives are formed, their paths are clear when they're in middle school, but when you look at them, you can kind of see. Mm. Like you see the dorky, you know, pudgy boy that you know in 5 years girls are going to be like following him around like a puppy dog.
Right.
You know, like you can see those things. And I think middle school, the reason why I like middle school so much is because of there's never a dull moment ever. Mm. It's never the same day twice.
Yeah.
Ever. And that's usually that way when working with kids, but like I have elementary people that tell me there is no way that I could do what you do.
Yep.
And that's fine because there's no way I could do elementary.
Right.
No. Yep. Like they just have this real ability, and I think the most important thing when dealing with middle school students is to treat them like people, because they're in that weird stage where they want to be grown, mm-hmm. but they don't really want to be grown. They just don't know it.
Right.
And you know, they want to make their mark and do some stupid stuff.
Yep.
And I ask them, you know, and I've done a lot of expulsion hearings.
Yeah.
I've probably done 10 or 15 over the past. Not that we've expelled 10 to 15 kids, but anything that's over 10 days is considered a removal.
Right.
So, you know, I've only had, out of those 10 to 15, I think I've had two very angry, contentious parents. Mm. And everybody else, like, hugged me, thanked me, you know, for treating their kid like a human being. Because I think sometimes the behavior masks the child. And their behavior, they're doing it for a reason. They either want the attention, or nobody taught them otherwise, or they got mixed up with somebody that they shouldn't have gotten mixed up with. Or, you know, there's a lot of reasons. But all of the kids, even the naughties, I mean, there's a couple of them that, you know, are out of my scope of help. But, you know, I have kids. I just saw one the other day that, you know, I took to a board hearing, and he, like, picked me up and spun me around in the high school hallway. And he's like, "Oh my God, I'm so happy to see you." And they make my heart happy because they know that I'm going to tell them if they screwed up. Right. Like they're going to hear about it, and they know it.
Yeah.
But my parting shot to them whenever they leave my office is, "I love you and I hope you have a good day. So I'm mad at you. I'm mad at you for the choices you made. I'm not mad at you as a person. Doesn't mean I don't still love you."
Yeah.
But, you know, we gotta figure this out, and we gotta help you do better.
Yeah.
And for the most part, we're pretty successful with that, where, you know, we've had kids that have made some really dumb decisions and, you know, and now I see them. Like one of our kids a few years ago, we taught him, and he is an auto mechanic now. So he came out at conferences just to see us because he knew we were open house, I think.
Right.
And one of my teammates at the time, Kim Atkins, she's like, "Hey, you're a mechanic. I got something wrong with my car." And he's like, "Well, give me your keys." So he proceeded to go out, shimmy under the car in the parking lot, look at it, take it around the block, give her a diagnostic when she came. He came back in, gave her keys. He's like, "All right, this is what you need. XYZ, bring it over here and tell him that this is what's wrong."
Yeah.
And he was the biggest pain in the butt. But, you know, he evolved, and we just try to support him. I try to support him as best I can.
Yeah.
And give them and their parents support, because their parents are like, "What the heck is this kid?
Yeah.
Like, my baby was awesome from K-6.
Right.
And then they hit seventh grade and they lose their mind.
Right.
And, you know, and I just tell them, I try to tell, I warn everybody. I even warned Seuss the other day because his kid's going into seventh grade. I was like, listen, just so you know, seventh grade is the black hole of death.
That's right.
And they fall apart and they come out on the other side about halfway through eighth grade. And then
it'll be okay.
Everything's all right.
Yep.
And he's like, man, I know. Thanks for the warning. It's going to be a doozy.
So you said something in there where you've dealt with a kid, and as they leave your office, you say, I'm mad at you, but I still love you. So where do you find the ability to hold those two things in tension? Like, where does that come from for you? Because my mom used to say that to us all the time, right? She, in her way, she'd say, she'd be like, her face would be red and shaking, like her whole body would be shaking. And she, you know, it's kind of like the Tom Hanks scene from A League of Their Own where
he missed
the cutoff again and he's like, we're going to work on hitting the cutoff. You know, and so my mom is looking at us like that. She's like, I love you, but I don't like you right now.
I have said that to a couple of kids.
So where do you find the ability to hold that tension? Because I think that's a hard tension. I mean, it's hard enough when it's your own, kind of your own flesh and blood kids. And I got to imagine for a lot of people, that's almost an unthinkable thing when it's other people's kids.
Well, I don't have children myself. I have a dog, and that is plenty for me.
It's too much for me. There's no way I could do a dog.
No, my dog is my ride or die. Like, she is in shotgun for everything. Kids, especially in our community, there's such a dichotomy of kids that you have the haves and the have-nots.
Mm.
And just because a kid lives in a really nice house doesn't mean they have love and support. And just because a kid lives in, you know, an apartment or at the trailer parks or even hotels doesn't mean that they don't have love and support.
Right.
And it's the behavior is masking something. Their behavior, they're choosing the behavior to get a response, be it a positive response, be it a negative response. Kids choose their behavior, sometimes consciously, sometimes subconsciously. And I think that when you have kids that come in that don't have that love and support, you don't always know, because you don't know what kind of environment they come from.
Right.
And it's hard. Not everybody can do it.
Right.
And it's hard to remember that sometimes, because there are some times where you said, you know, like, punt them through the field goal of life.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, I am just done. And I've told kids sometimes, I'm like, I need a break from you.
Yep.
So I need you to go sit out in the main office or go sit down in counseling. I need a break from your face right now. So you're going to go down there. Yeah. I'm going to calm down and then we're going to come back together.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just look at me like, did you just say that? Yes. Yes, I did. Go. And, you know, I'll bring them back and we'll have a talk. And it's genuinely for me, I think they know. I always want my kids, and now that I don't have a classroom anymore and, you know, I have 900 kids,
mm-hmm.
I want them to know that no matter what, I'm always in their corner.
Yeah.
And even if they screw up really bad, and some of them have, that when they get to high school and they walk across that stage for graduation, that I will be in that audience and I will be hooting and hollering when mm-hmm. they call their names, because I want them to know that no matter what life situation they have with step parents or absent parents or, you know, or even you know, like in your and Amy's case, you're present parents and you're phenomenal. You have a phenomenal family. But no matter what, I always wanted Libby and Ethan to know that I was there mm-hmm. and that they could count on me. And that was, I was one adult that they could always count on that was outside their family dynamic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my teachers at the middle school feel the same way.
Yeah.
And it's really important to me that they know that I'm there.
Yeah.
And I'm always a phone call or a email away.
Yep.
Because sometimes, you know, with parents working the hours that they work or whatever, I may see their kid more than their parents do.
Yep.
And we're a team. And I tell the parents that all the time. This is not like, even with my super naughties that I see all the time, I tell the parent who's, you know, frustrated and angry that their kid is getting in trouble yet again and I have to call yet again. I'm like, this is not, I'm not sending this kid home to you and saying, fix them, because right. it's just as much our responsibility as it is your responsibility to come together as a team and help this kid be successful.
Yeah.
Because it's really important.
Yeah.
That our families and our teachers and our community works together, because it does take a village.
Yeah.
And you know, I once you're mine, you're always mine. So now I'm just on a bigger level.
Yep. Yep. One of the things that always strikes me when I show up at the middle school, and it seems like these days, because my kids are, you know, with one being gone and one being a senior, when I show up at the middle school, it's either for something really fun, like the tailgate that Seuss puts together, or it's something tragic.
Really bad.
And what really strikes me about both of those environments is when I see kids come up to you, it doesn't matter if it's a tragic or if it's joy, they embrace you. Like, it's like they know Fergie is the one that, you know, when they're happiest, they're going to show up. You're going to be there to give them that happy hug. And when it's hard and they're sad and they're heartbroken, you're the one that's also going to be there to give them that sad hug, too. And
yeah, it was a rough, I'm getting goosebumps, actually.
Yeah.
That year, for those of you that don't know, 1 year we lost from April, no, it was March of 17 to March of 18. We lost 4 students.
Mm-hmm.
One was a former Lincoln student, but still had a lot of Lincoln connections. We lost them to suicide. And a lot of people talk about, you know, how this year was the hardest year of their career.
Yeah.
With COVID and stuff, and I've told people, I'm like, yeah, this year was terrible, but the worst year of my life, I think, was that year when yep. we lost that many kids, because you can't make it go away for yep. those kids. And this year's juniors,
yep.
Well, actually, this coming year's seniors now is that group of kids.
Yep.
And they have a very special place in my soul, because, you know, there were a lot of them that were literal puddles in my office or in the hallway, where I literally like had to scoop up
yep.
them and physically carry them, because they were just devastated.
Yep.
And
well, in that class, it's so interesting to think about that particular class, since Libby's a part of that crew, you know. I remember, so when they were coming into sixth grade, that was when all the contract stuff was going
yes,
on.
Yes. And the year with no prep.
The year with no prep.
Year of infamy.
And so it's just, I don't think it's a coincidence that the year of no prep, the year when teachers just were like barely trying to keep their head above water. You know, so those kids didn't get the kind of sixth grade,
we're going to love on you.
We're going to love on you the way that the kind of the previous class, like they walked through, like they had that different experience. And then now this is the class that has, of their 3 years in high school, have spent a year and a half of it at home. Like, they're going, I mean, it is, yeah, that's just a...
That's, that class has a special, like, spot in my heart. Because yeah. they went through so much as a group.
Yep.
And it didn't matter. You know, it wasn't like a... I think in a lot of high schools and a lot of middle schools, you have your defined groups, right? You have your jock groups, you have your, and I don't even know if that's the word they use. They have your athlete group and, you know, they don't use the same labels they did when you and I were in school, but,
up in college, I can tell you, you have athletes. This is the lingo I learned. You have athletes and NARPs.
The heck is a NARP?
Non-athletic regular person. So Ethan and, you know, one of his, you know, Ethan and his buddy Davion, right? Davion is a really good basketball player, but he's not playing college basketball. Was hanging out with Ethan and all his crew, and one of the girls is like, "Tell me more about Davion. What sport does he play?" Ethan's like, "Oh, he doesn't play a sport." She's like, "Wait, Davion's a NARP?" And Ethan's like, "What?
What the heck is that?"
So this is at least up at Saginaw Valley, that's their lingo.
Oh geez, Louise. A NARP.
That's so funny.
I'll never I can't.
I will never that's never gonna leave my head. Like that I'm like I was a full on NARP then.
Oh, totally. Well, I don't know. I played volleyball for a little while. Yeah. But then I got a job, and working was way more important than sports because I liked my money.
Yep. So cash is good.
Yep. Cash is king.
Yep.
That's funny. But with those suicides, it didn't matter.
Right.
What group you belonged to, it was all. It reached into every pocket of kids, and especially when you have kids that you've grown up with, you know, and were in classes with all through kindergarten, suffering that much loss. One loss is bad enough.
Right.
But when you lose four, and actually there were three in that class. The other one was a couple years younger, but it was still reopening that wound.
Yep.
And it was really hard.
Yep.
That was the worst year of my career.
Yep.
And COVID stunk. Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't want to do COVID again.
Right.
But that year was just really, really, really hard.
So how do you persevere through that without becoming jaded, without becoming cynical, without just kind of getting to that place of, because as much as the kids were hurt and they were puddles, but I know the teachers and then the stat like gutted as well.
Yeah.
So How do you come out of that and say, I'm going to open my heart again and I'm going to let these stinky, goofy middle schoolers.
They smell so bad.
They smell so bad.
Oh.
I'm going to let them back in. That's the old positive from COVID, right? You don't have to smell them for a year.
And, well, it's really the Axe body spray that's the problem. Because if you walk by a boy's locker room in middle school, it's like...
Yeah. Yeah,
I have no word. It's like a green cloud that just kind of oozes out of the, like out of the cracks of the doors because the Axe body spray is in full effect.
Oh my
gosh! And you,
that's
like,
so good.
What the heck so is that? Good. And then, there's
something wrong with them.
They're so
the prefrontal lobe is not fully.
No, full. Not at all. No. To me, it's never for me personally, and I know that there were some teachers that really struggled. With the death of those kids.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
You know, and it was really hard for me. I spent a lot of time, that year I got an outside therapist and I went like twice a week.
Yeah.
Because I had immeasurable guilt, not because I did anything or had anything to do with their choices, but just because I felt so god-awful terrible that those kids didn't feel like they could come to me and talk to me about anything. And I was devastated personally. So, you know, I had to go and do some self-care to be able to continue to love my kids no matter what. Because it was never an option of, I'm just not going to do this anymore.
Right.
Because if anything, that just meant that I needed to love on them more.
Yep.
You know, and let them know that, you know, I'm there, and yeah. I'm just a phone call or an email away. And I get emails from students that are super duper duper naughty, and that have gone on to different places. Like they've, you know, moved to a different family member's house, or they left the state. And I'll get an email every once in a while that says, "Hey, just want to let you know that I'm okay." Hmm. And I'm like, eh.
"That's awesome."
And then I get weepy, yep. because they know that I worry about them. Right. And you know, when the last death occurred, that few years ago, I had a couple girls that were friends with the first girl that had passed, and they came down. I was in the middle of, you know, dealing with all the logistics for getting kids help, but they came down and they just left me a note and said, "We know you're worried about us, and we just want to let you know that we're okay. We'll come down if we need anything." And I was like, see,
that's awesome.
What I want. That's what I want all of our kids to know.
Yep.
No matter if you're a straight A or a straight E, or you're super good or you're super naughty.
Right.
I want them to know that they always, always
can come
to me, and we'll figure it out. It's a team effort.
Yep.
And we'll figure it out. And you know, we had some incidents with vaping. I have a drawer of vapes. Like, of the various apparatuses that are vapes. And this poor kid is addicted. Like, yeah. Straight addicted to nicotine.
Yep.
And I told him, I'm like, listen, you have an adult problem, and you're 12.
Yep.
So we need to figure this out, because it's really hard for a lot of people to, you know, kick that addiction as adults.
Right.
And you're 12.
Right.
So we need to, like, figure out how to get you some help and how to get you... And they were like, well, you know, my dad's going to be mad, or my mom's going to be mad. I'm like, well, rightfully so. I mean, you know, understandable.
Yep. It's part of it.
But ultimately, we need to figure out how to get you some help.
Yep.
And, you know, when we got some resources and things like that, because they need to know that I'm on their side. And they may not like me. There are some kids that... I know it's shocking, but they cannot stand me. And I still smile and tell them good morning.
Yep.
Every day when they walk past, good morning. Every day. And they're growling at me or whatever, or they won't respond back,
yep.
which is my biggest pet peeve in America.
Yep.
Where they just
yeah.
and look at me and I'm like, it's okay.
I still love you.
I'm still going to say good morning every day.
Yep.
Because now I know I annoy you.
That's
so
right.
I'm going to make sure I do it twice.
Because
when you
goodbye.
Leave, yep. When you leave at Lincoln Middle School, you're going to go, oh, I'm glad I don't have to see that woman anymore. And then I'm going to come find you at the high school.
That's right.
And tell you good morning.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
And, yeah. You're not going to get away from me.
Yep.
It's that forced love, you know, like Bugs Bunny from those cartoons where I'm going to love him and squeeze him and call him George.
Exactly.
Till
their head pops off.
Yep. You're gonna get me whether you want it or not.
That's right.
That's just the way it. This is
just the way it is. Oh man. All right. So how do you define love?
You know, you texted me this question.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about it, and I don't know that I have an answer. You know, I look at like the family love, and you know, I would walk through fire for my parents, my brother, and then I have distant family, which I appreciate them because they're related to me, but we're not really close. So,
yeah.
You know, I always want well for them, but I don't like. It's not the same.
Yep.
And then you know, I have my best friend and her family that are literally my own family, and. You know, just making them, same thing as my kids, right? Like, you know, my best friend had a problem last week, and she called and told me about it. And I said, I'm not working. I'm off for the summer. I can be there in 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, well, not yet. Okay. Well, just let me know.
Yep.
And, you know, there's just, it's just... Not losing yourself in the process, but making sure that your people that you love have everything that they need to be successful, and that they have your I don't want to say undivided, but you know what I mean. Unshaken.
Yeah.
Support.
Yep.
And love. You know, there's that love that you have, like relationship love, when you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
Where you like meet somebody and then you're just completely enamored live and breathe for that person. And then like you're devastated beyond reason when something doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And I don't think that love, well, I don't even think it's love. I don't know what it is, but puppy love, I guess.
Right.
Where you're just enthralled with that person. And then as you get older, I think it's a love is more of a respect. Where you value that person so much that you want their opinion and you want their support and you want to build a life with that person, either romantically or platonically, depending on, you know, who they are.
Right.
And just knowing that you respect them and that they respect you and that they respect your decisions and vice versa. But I don't know. I really struggle with that question.
Yeah.
Like I was really having a hard time like trying to decide what love means for me, because I'll say it all the time.
Right.
But when it comes down to like trying to explain what it is, it's hard.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's one of those things that's like, you know it when you see it, but how do you explain it? It's really hard.
It's like the people that you love become part of you and vice versa. Like there are, like, if we talk about students, like when I first got here, I was telling you about a group of kids that I had that they were just old souls and we just clicked. And through the years, there have been a smattering of kids that have come back, even from my years in Virginia, where they've like come found me on Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm a teacher now. And I just wanted to tell you that I became a teacher because of you. And,
that's awesome.
And I'm like, oh man, don't blame me for that. Yeah. But, you know, it's just those people that you love, you like give a piece of yourself to.
Yeah.
And you take a piece of them back.
Yeah.
And you use those building blocks to kind of become who you are as a, you know, a rounded individual. Like I think of my best friend. We've been best friends since we were 11, and I'm 40 something. And you know, I know that no matter what happens, it doesn't matter. She's there for me, and I'm there for her. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Like it's not even a negotiable. It's not even a thing. You know, we have people in our lives have come and gone, and it's just an understood, I've always got your back no matter what.
Yeah.
And even, you know, with my significant other, he knows that, you know, you get all of this.
Right.
Like, this is not just I don't just check in
for,
like, a couple weeks and say, I'm good. Yep. See you later.
Yep.
Call me if you need me. Oh, no. You get the Ferg experience.
That's right.
You get the whole thing. So you get me, like, you know, texting you, saying, how's your day? Oh, work's really bad. I want their names.
Yep.
I want their numbers.
I have a special set of skills.
I have a special set of skills that I'm more than willing to use. You know, and they laugh, and I'm like, no, seriously, who are they? Yeah. Like, I'll find them.
Oh, no, you think I'm kidding.
Yeah, not kidding.
That's not how this works.
They don't get to make your life miserable. You know, awesome. I look at my kids, and again, like that big group. You know, I have some kids that have gone on to college and have, you know, successful careers and families. And then I have some kids that graduated high school and that was as far as their education went and decided to do other things with their lives. They're still very successful and have children and things like that. And it doesn't matter to me.
Yep.
And one of my kids just invited me to her like third baby shower. And I taught her in 2002.
Nice.
And she's like, well, you're my second mom. I need to see you again. My mom says hi, wants to know how you are. And you know, and she was one of the ones that was, I think I have a lot of gray hair that is named after her. And, but her mom, like, even when she made it into high school, her mom would pick her up from high school when she got suspended and drive her to the middle school and call me from the main office and say, I need you to come talk to her.
That's right.
And I was like, all right, I'll be there in a minute.
Yep.
So I think love, love is just, like you said, you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And it's not the same, like, puppy dog love that we had when we were in our 20s or even high school kids.
Yeah.
Like, you know, high school kids are dating.
Right.
Or college kids are dating. And it's like their whole world becomes that other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh my gosh. No. No.
Yeah.
We were at, I was at Nathan Seuss's house the other night, as a matter of fact. And some of his friends' kids came by to drop off something. And they were talking about their friend who is graduating high school and has a boyfriend in the military.
Okay.
And for those of you that don't know, I am a huge, huge supporter of our military. And I'm like, listen, let me tell you how this is going to play out. She's going to go away to school. He's in the military. It's not going to go well. So
right.
You need to tell her to, like, run fast, run swift, because kids, they just don't know.
Yep.
There's so much growth that happens that they just...
Well... We would laugh because, you know, I was a campus minister for, Amy and I were both in campus ministry for, you know, 10 years before we went on to other things. And you could set a clock by it. Like, you could set your watch by, like, it was like week three. It was just like Bloody Sunday. I mean, it was like, you knew it was coming.
Yep.
Every girl was going to show up to, you know, he broke up with me.
Yep.
And every boy's like,
yep.
Dude, I totally dumped her. I moved on.
Or vice versa. You know, the guys are the ones that are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who are crushed. But it was like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks into school.
Yep. Mid to late September is when everything goes south.
Those relationships from high school just fall apart.
And some people, you know, like my best friend and her husband have been together since they were 15 and 16.
Yep.
Some people are
lucky enough
to grow together.
That's right.
Rather than apart. But that's a few. That's why I tell these girls that come in, or even guys that come in and they're like, oh, I'm like, listen. Let me tell you something.
Let me tell you.
Like, you're going to go to high school, like, especially that eighth grade year where these girls are like, or in guys, it's a guy-girl thing. It's not just one gender. They're like devastated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the eighth grade dance happened and now they're not together anymore.
I'm like,
look, high school is a whole new world.
You're
going to get to, like, ninth grade and 10th grade and you're going to have some senior that walks by and go, hey, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
And then your whole world's going to change again.
Yep.
So your world's going to change 16 times by the time you graduate, at least.
At least.
And then there's this one girl. She's in Libby's class. And she saw me. It was before COVID, so must have been like spring of their like 10th grade year.
Okay.
And she was like, you were right. I'm like, no kid. Get out of town. She's like, oh my gosh, you should see my boyfriend. I got this date for prom. And I'm like, yep. She goes, oh, he's so good looking. Like, I told you. I said, you ain't fooling around with that goofy,
that's awesome.
Nerdy.
Right.
Not even that nerdy. He was just a dork. I'm like, you just no.
Yeah.
She's like, you were right.
Yeah.
Well, obviously.
Obviously. I'm the great Fergie.
Well, I don't know about that, but
duh.
They when I tell them, I'm like, look, but there's all different kinds of love.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'm really struggling with that question.
So listening to, you know, through our whole conversation and listening to even the way you're defining it, it's like the word that comes to my mind as you're talking is that love is perseverance.
Yes.
Like it's not going to quit. And it's like you said, you and your best friend. I mean, there's no question. It just, when you guys need to go best friend up, you go.
Yeah.
And everything gets dropped. And there's just that perseverance to it. That
absolutely. For those, once you get the full Ferg experience,
yeah.
it's a lifetime commitment.
Yep.
Like, you're not going to, You know, I had a friend, his father passed away, and he's one of my good friends from high school, and we've reconnected through Facebook, and now I've started spending more time together, and his dad's funeral was last week, and I was like, all right, where's it at? He's like, oh no, you don't have to come. He's like, you know, it's up in Flint, I know you're working. I said, nope, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. I'll be there, and, you know, and that's just how it is.
It's just how it's going to be.
Yeah. And it's not open for negotiation.
Right.
Because that's what happens. Yep. When you sign up for a friendship with me or a relationship with me, then that's what you get.
All in.
All in. So all the chips are in.
That's right. So who modeled this for you? Like, where do you feel like you saw this? Because one of the things I'm learning is so much about who we are, how we love, how we pursue to love well, is rooted so much in what we've seen, and you know we catch it from other people. It's like an infectious, a good kind of infectious disease. But where do you feel like you caught this?
My parents and my grandparents. My mother is 100% Polish, and is stubborn as the day is long. And my father is Scottish and English, and a little bit of Irish, I think, in there somewhere, and is stubborn as the day is long. So it's that you don't quit. Like, it's that mentality of you just don't quit. So it's just not an option. And, you know, I moved away to Virginia. And I had never really been away from home. I mean, Eastern was an hour away from my parents' house, so that really didn't count. You know, and all of a sudden, I was 14 hours away.
Yeah.
And I called my dad one day. I'll never forget it. I was crying. I got in a car accident. Like, I got rear-ended. I got a ticket on the way home. Like, it was just the worst day ever.
Oh.
I called my dad, and I was like, I want to go home. It was, like, October, November.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, all right. Your mom and I will come get you tomorrow. But you know what that means, don't you?
What?
It means you quit.
Son of a...
He's like, so I'll come get you.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll pack up the truck. We'll pick up the trailer. We'll come get you. We'll come get all your stuff, and we'll bring you home. But that means you quit. Are you okay with that? You dirty bugger.
Mm-hmm.
He knew exactly what to say.
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, and my dad and my mom have been my biggest supporters throughout my whole life. My grandparents the same way.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend and her parents. It was just, that's just what you do. You don't quit. And, you know, this may come as a surprise, but I was a holy terror when I was in high school. And
color me shocked.
I know. I had a temper that went on for days, and it wasn't good. And they, you know, and I did not treat my parents very well. My mom mostly, because my dad worked and was gone. But my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I did not treat her very well because, you know, I'm in high school and I think I know everything, and what do you know?
Yep.
And she didn't put me out to the curb, so, which is a blessing in and of itself.
Yeah.
And now, you know, my mom is one of my best friends, but it was just that you just don't. And then part of it's just probably, you know, the fact that both of my parents are stubborn as hell,
right?
And so I got a double dose.
Yep.
And it's just that's it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
There's no deviation from the stubbornness.
Yeah.
It is me, and that's the way it is. And I think that having people that love me, even though I am a flawed soul, makes me want to give that energy back out.
Yep.
You know, I've made some dumb decisions in my life, just dumb. And, you know, my parents, they let me do it.
Yep.
Even though they really didn't want me to. My best friend would say, sure you want to do that? And I'd say, nope, this is what I'm doing. And she'd be like, are you sure? Yep.
Yep.
And then she never said, I told you so. She just gave me the look.
The look.
And I was like,
Yeah, I was dumb.
Yeah. I admit it openly, you know, and my significant other calls me a bull in a china shop. He's like, bull?
China shop.
I'm like, yeah. Shut it. You know, I told him, I'm like, you don't get, like.
That's awesome.
You know, I really struggled with the funeral, my friend's dad's funeral.
Mm.
You know, because I was texting my best friend through the service because she was feeling really bad that she couldn't be there. And I'm texting, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, he's doing such a good job giving his dad's eulogy. And she's texting me and she's like, well, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how that's possible. Like, you know, because she's really close to her dad. I'm really close to mine. And I'm like, well, we'll just do it together.
Yep.
So it's just the way it is. But I was having a really hard time.
Yeah.
And I held it together until I got in the car and I just,
yeah.
And I'm not a crier.
Right.
It's not my thing. It's not my jam. I don't like it. And, I called, Tony, my significant other, and I was like, and then I was like hyperventilating. He's like, okay, what you doing? I'm going home. Let's just pull over.
Yeah.
Let's just take a minute, shall we?
Yeah, that's right. That's
right. And I was just like, because it hurts your heart when you can't take away the hurt for somebody else.
Yep.
And because you can bear the brunt of it for somebody else. And yeah, I think just the people, to go circle back, I kind of got off track there, to circle back, I think that, you know, the people, my family and my friends, and even my kids, like, it makes my heart so happy that even though I don't have my children, I don't have children of my own, I have, you know, I think about how many kids I've had over the past 25 years, and I'm like, I don't have kids.
Right.
I got more than you guys can shake a stick at.
Right.
You know, I have my group of students that I still talk to, and they, you know, every teacher appreciation day or whatever, they'll email me or, you know, send me a message on Facebook that tells me how much, you know, they appreciate me, and which really they don't know how much I appreciate them.
Right.
And how much that I, how so proud I am of the people that they become. So I think, I think my kids teach me a lot about love. My students do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my friends and my family have really, and community too.
Yep.
Like, you know, just you rally, and that's just it. I've never known anything different.
Yeah.
And the people that aren't that same, mentality aren't the ones that stay around.
Right.
So I don't.
Yep.
They come and go and see you later, and that's it.
Yep.
And, that's okay.
Yeah.
Cause I don't have time to deal with foolishness.
That's right.
So come on through, and if you want to stay, stay. Cool. If you don't,
yep,
you know where to go.
All right, so to kind of wrap this up, my first interview in this series was with Rob Norris, and I don't know if you know Rob or not. Probably don't know him super well yet, but you will get to know Rob and Mindy as their girls progress through the middle school, because the Norrises are a force of nature in all the best kinds of ways.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so we were talking, and you know, I asked him, you know, what does he do when he kind of, you know, needs to kind of get his love tanks filled back up, right? And he started talking about music, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna do this in every episode now, where I'm gonna ask, what are like the three or four, maybe five songs that when you need to like just kind of get it going, you know, when the Fergie experience needs to ramp back up, where do you, you know, what do you go to? What's your go to?
Well, you know, I am a child of the 80s.
Yep, yep.
So, Duran Duran is my all-time favorite band.
Okay.
And I can go from, you know, well, actually Duran Duran and Van Halen.
Okay.
I was devastated when Eddie Van Halen passed.
Yeah.
I could care less about Van Hagar or
right.
Dave Lee Roth. I could care less who their frontman was.
Yep.
I loved Eddie Van Halen.
Yep.
I loved him. I love electric guitar. I love him. It depends on the mood,
yeah.
right? Like, my parents, you know, my mom's a baby boomer, and my, not so much my dad, but, you know, I listen to Elvis. I listen to mm-hmm. the Beatles. I listen to, when I'm having a really bad day and I'm fired up and somebody's in really deep trouble, it's yeah. Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
you know, and, like, if I just need to relax, it's James Taylor. If it's you know, just a.
So what's your Duran Duran go to? If you gotta like, you're like, all right, I'm gonna grab a song.
Probably. Rio.
Okay. Yeah. All right. How about Van Halen? You got one. You're like. This is if I'm gonna listen to one before I gotta go give the big speech or the you know I gotta get geared up to have that conversation. What's the one?
Eruption.
Okay.
Because it has you know such a focus on Eddie's guitar skills.
Yeah.
James Taylor is Close Your Eyes. That's my. And then 316 by Eddie Van Halen. It's just okay. A real short instrumental that he wrote for Wolfgang's birthday.
Okay.
And I love Erasure. I'm probably going to listen to Erasure on the way home.
There you go.
Willie Nelson, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, Johnny Cash. Mm. Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison Blues. Like I have such a with my parents.
Yeah.
Like having such a huge dichotomy of music.
Yep.
Like
it's awesome.
You know, I love old country. Like I love it. Like George Strait, I'm all about, and that's not even old country, but like Hank Williams Sr. and like all them. Like I can. I'm like a musical chameleon.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. George Strait, that's a different breed right there.
He's just phenomenal.
George Strait's a man. I mean, when you think about the fact that, I mean, there's no Garth Brooks if there's no George Strait.
Oh, I love Garth Brooks.
And it's just that simple.
I love Garth Brooks so much. He's just the nicest guy.
Only people who have no taste dislike Garth Brooks.
There was a kid, so I used to sub in Flint before I moved to Virginia, and I would like sub at my high school and you know local high schools around the area because I didn't figure out that I liked high school kids until after I was done with school.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh crap, I should have probably done secondary instead of elementary, but whatever. And there was this kid and he was super dorky, like super, you know, like right. had that big chubby cheeks and that baby fat before they get like really tall.
Yep.
And he was sitting there and he was so excited. He's like, you have to see the pictures from my vacation. And I said, whatever. And he whips out this picture and here's him and Garth Brooks in the grocery store.
What?
And I was like, shut up. And he's like, no. He's like, I was in Nashville and I was in the Food Lion in Nashville. And I looked up and there was Garth Brooks and he was just standing there. And I walked over and I was like, oh my gosh, you're Garth Brooks. And he's like, thanks for telling me. And then he invited this kid and his mom to his house for dinner.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
That is awesome.
He had pictures of him and Garth Brooks sitting at the kitchen table having dinner.
No way.
And I'm like, see?
That's legit.
I love him.
That's legit.
That's just, he is such a great man.
Yep.
And he's just, he grins. And I just really appreciate that.
Yep. Still.
And you too, beautiful day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one of my go-tos.
Yeah. That concert. Their Joshua Tree anniversary. I like was like fangirling so hard. Like I was in tears and had goosebumps the entire time because it was such an incredible musical experience.
The two best shows I've ever seen were Garth Brooks. Saw him at the Joe and just unbelievable. And U2 at Spartan Stadium.
I saw you two at the Silver Dome.
It was insane.
At the Silver Dome. That was cool because there was a crazy thunderstorm.
Oh, nice.
And they like turned out all the lights so you could see the lightning in the Silver Dome. Yep. And actually, I don't know if you know Hannah and Grace Serbach.
Names sound familiar.
Their dad, Jason, and I knew each other in college.
Okay.
And so he took me. He and the another one of our friends went together.
Okay.
And it was just this like amazing experience.
Yeah.
And I miss live music. I can't wait to get back.
Did you see, so we're going to wrap this up, but did you see the YouTube video circulating? Because the Foo Fighters just had their first...
I saw it, Madison Square Gardens.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, Dave Grohl.
The opening 5 minutes of that concert was...
I can't believe I didn't mention the Foo.
It was unbelievable. I mean, just...
Foo, Learn to Fly.
So
and
good.
Everlong.
Yep.
Are like two of my big, like...
It begs... But here's the problem with the Foo Fighters... The name of their band, it just begs so many questions.
It's hilarious. It's about
are there Foos, and why should we be fighting them?
Well, because it's what they used to call like the UFOs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So how the band name got along or got going was there was like the UFOs, like they called them like the for like UFO issues, and that's I watched an interview with Dave. I'm in love with Dave Grohl, just so everybody knows. Dave Grohl and Eddie Van Halen are like...
Right.
And, it was really funny. Like, that's Dave Grohl awesome. Is hilarious.
He is so funny. I've been meaning to get to the documentaries that he put together.
Well, so Vans Tennis Shoes came out with the 25th anniversary Foo Fighter tennis shoe.
Uh-huh.
And I currently own a pair.
Atta
and I'm
girl.
Debating. I'm like, do I put them in a glass case? Or do I wear the Foo Fighter Van tennis shoes?
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? Like, do I have them up? Do I wear them? And they've got like the double Fs on the back.
Yep.
And they got the Foo and the Fighter on the side. And
so this is the perfect place to end this podcast because this brings us to a great call of action. So what we need are... people to leave a comment with, should you glass case the Foo Fighter shoes
or
do you wear them? So faithful listeners, all three of you, we need your input on this one. So if you've made it this far into the conversation, leave a comment. Tell us, should the Fergie experience rock the Foo Fighter tennis shoes or put them in a glass case to save for posterity? Probably, like, what, in the middle of your kitchen table?
Obviously.
Oh,
mounted on the wall.
Mounted
like
on the wall.
Like, over the TV.
There it is.
Because like, Dave Grohl, like, I've seen a couple things where people are, like young
yeah,
people
yeah.
are like, did you know that, like, Dave Grohl looks a lot like the drummer in Nirvana? And I'm like, oh, sweet.
Please, for the love of God, stop talking
They're
now.
They're one in the same.
This is where you say... Never prove your stupidity by talking.
Yes. What is wrong with you? Always
guys,
a lovely chat.
This is great. This is great. And so definitely leave a comment. Let us know what you think about the shoes. And until next time, love well, my friends.